Welcome to the Inclusive Leader Spotlight, a podcast that showcases leaders who are making a positive impact in the workplace by leveraging diversity, equity, and inclusion. I am your host, Juan Taveras, founder and CEO of DEI ProFinder. Our business is dedicated to fostering connections between business leaders and right-fit DEI professionals. We are on a mission to demystify diversity, equity, and inclusion, and we're doing it one conversation at a time. We believe that DEI is not only a moral and social obligation, but also a business imperative that can create positive and engaging workplaces, boost productivity, and drive innovation. Join us as we explore the power of DEI and its potential to transform the workplace and society at large. Welcome to another episode of the Inclusive Leader Spotlight. Today, I am honored to have Deb Crow on our show, founder and CEO of Davwill Consulting. Deb is also an executive and leadership coach, a speaker, international best-selling author, a podcast host, and professor. She is on a mission to show leaders that they don't have to be perfect to be caring, effective, and heart-centered leaders, a topic which she elaborates on in her most recent book, The Heart-Centered Leadership Playbook, which I'm so eager to learn more about. So welcome, Deb.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is such an honor. So thank you. Thank you for being here. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Like we were talking right before we hit record about how important it is for us to, for people and leaders to engage in conversations about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and the many different ways that this work can be approached, which is why I'm so excited to learn more about you and what you do.
Absolutely. I'm excited to get into a good conversation.
All right. So let's do it. So I know I always open our episodes with a very high level but important question. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm a daughter. I'm a wife. I'm a mom. I'm a new nanny. And I am super passionate about us leading our life and not getting anchored to extrinsic labels to audit or prove our self-awareness. Our worth and worthiness have nothing to do with our identity, our education. I'm a big believer that our life shows up in our work and our work shows up in our life. But for the sake of answering your question, I spend my days having great conversations with people like you on podcasts. I have my own podcast, which is always fun when I'm on another podcast host. It's fun to be on the other side of the mic and not you know, worrying about the questions of what I'm going to ask and just having fun and answering them. Yeah. But I spend my days coaching leaders from the management level, director level, all the way up to C-suite. That is my love. That is my passion. And then on a wider scale, I work globally as a team facilitator. I work with a lot of accidental leaders, which I'd love to chat to you about. And then I've made it my mission to further open my bandwidth in what I call my legacy years, because I'm on part two of, you know, the next level of mastery in my life. And just this morning, I went back to my high school and I got to teach the senior leadership class. And I hadn't set foot in my high school in 40 years. So I feel if I have to trudge through the tsunami of leadership to pave the way for the up and coming leaders, I think not only is that paramount, but that's a fundamental deep portion of my legacy that I want to spend time giving back, whether I do it in person or virtually, but that's how I'm spending my days. And because I keep getting asked, I'm working on book number two.
I love it. And it's going to be a good one. So looking forward to that. Wow. Thank you so much for that introduction. I love that you opened with, you sort of answered it in a non-traditional way, right? So, which is why I intentionally ask, who are you? Then what do you do? Because we often, so often associate our identities with our work. And to your point, it's all intertwined, right? So it's all connected. And we are often drawn to the work that we do because of our other invisible identities, right? So thank you so much for starting that way. Yes, and so important for us to leverage our experience, right, to pave the way for the next generation of leaders. And Gosh, even your current book, you know, I bet you intentionally called it a playbook because it's meant to be to serve as a guide and
Yes.
not so much an instruction book, but a resource for new and upcoming leaders to leverage and to learn from folks that have already been through it
Yeah.
and have done it.
Absolutely. And I didn't want to write it to be a one and done, like you read it and it's on the shelf. People from all over the world have sent me pictures, and there's post-it notes and highlighted pages and pages that have the corners turned. And it's not just a leadership book, it's a call to action with actual strategy. So people are like, I'm going to go back to this. I want to reread this. And I'm hoping it becomes a book that people reread as they elevate in their life and in their leadership, because the subtitle is How to Master the Art of Heart in Life and Leadership, and it's synonymous. So that's a fun thing that people have noticed, and it's just rewarding to get emails and pictures of people that keep telling me the same message, or they hear my voice when they're reading it, which I think is the biggest compliment.
Yeah, that's really cool. I bet. Okay. So you mentioned something there that triggered a thought for me, and now I just lost it. So let me think about this one second. It was a good one. Oh, so it's a reference guide. So you want folks to return, right, to this
Yeah.
book and read it again. And that's so powerful because I, you know, we can read books today and take away meaning based on what we're currently experiencing in our lives, and then we reread a book in a year or two and take different meaning from it, right? So it's beautiful that you've written the book in that way so that it can be a continual font of knowledge and wisdom. So thank you for that. I have a question about your passion essentially for this work. Where did it come from? Was it a particular moment or experience that you had, or did you know at a very early age that this is what you wanted to
Well, I'm going to be sending you my book, so I don't want to do a complete spoiler
do?
alert, but I'll give you a Coles note. So there's a whole chapter in my book on my Irish Nana. And she was really like my mom. She really helped in raising me, helping me understand morals and values and all the things that a grandparent will do. But she taught me something at a very early age, and it was around 8 or 9. That I can always control me. I can't control other people, but I can control me. And really, when I started my company at 24, I was young. I had just lost my dad, and I had some really awful bosses. I won't candy coat it. And I used to think to myself, I'm trying to struggle as a young female working because I had to stop university to support myself. And I'm thinking about the moral compass that I was pointed to from my nana. And then I'm looking at how these women were treating me. And I was like the all-star employee. I came in early. I stayed late. My desk was clean. I wasn't a clock watcher. I was all the things. And I would get to the end of the 90-day probation, and they would look me straight in the eye and they'd say, "It's just not working." And I internalized that for so long. And I remember at my last job, the vice president took me for lunch and he said, "You're losing your job today." And I just started crying because I was like, "What am I doing wrong?" And then he said, "It has nothing to do with you. You have a boss who's looking at your leadership, doesn't want to foster it, and it's easier for her to let you go and say it's not working." And he said, "Go start your own business." And I did. And that was like 34 years ago. So when I think back to Sheryl Sandberg's book of Lean In, that was my profile. I was the verbose kid, the happy kid, asking all the questions and too loud, too this, too that. And then when I realized these were some of the comments coming back in the workplace, I was too chatty, too nice, I laughed too much. All these positive character traits that intertwine with emotional intelligence. And I'm like, wait a minute here. Like, these are positive traits. These are vigilant of my character. But if someone keeps telling you point blank over and over again, you're this, you're that, and then Cheryl writes that book and says, we need to foster these qualities in young girls and young boys. And I was like, okay. And now I'm doing that work as part of my legacy, because I want these young leaders who, you know, are looking at their vision, you know, really holding on to their clarity and thinking where they want to go. So I'm trying to get out and talk to as many as I can, because I don't want them to be told what I was told. So if I can take that tsunami to clear that path for them, I want leaders of all levels, which my book was written for all levels of leadership. I want to remove people from this destination disease. There is no destination. It's a journey. It's a life journey. It's a leadership journey. And if we could just accept it as that and embrace it as that and live our lives with that, I think a lot of people would take off this big obligation cloak that's sitting on their shoulders.
Oof. That's very profound. And it resonates with me, because I you're right. They're somewhere, whether in school or early in your career, you start hearing these messages of what you should be and how you should behave and what you should achieve or strive for. And it's often the titles and the big roles, but that's not all of them, right? It's not the most important thing. It's not all of it. It's oftentimes not even what is going to fulfill us at the end of the day. And I love that you are, first of all, that you embraced that for yourself so early on. And what an awesome sort of, it sounds like a mentor you had, someone who told you.
He truly was. And I mentioned him in my book. I lost him 5 years ago to cancer. Oh. And right up until he passed, he's like, write the book. And so when I had my book signing, I had his family come and I gave a little speech and I talked about, you know, all of his positive words of wisdom for 3 decades of my life. He saw me the day I started my business. He saw me grow and achieve success. And so I was sad that I didn't have him for my book launch, but he's in my book. He's got one of his quotes is in my book, and I dedicate the book to him. And sharing that moment with his family was really emotional. And it was like a full circle for me.
That's beautiful. Wow. Yeah. So powerful. And now you get to be that for that inspiration and that hope for the next generation of leaders. I love it. And just the amount of lives and trajectories, right, that you're changing by sharing your story. But going beyond that, which I want to get into, is how you not teach, but like coach and develop leaders to be more authentic and more heart-centered. Let's dive into some.
I put them through a really unique exercise. And if I had to describe it, they have to lift the lid on their own Pandora's box. I can't help you change from where you are right now until we go back and do that life leadership journey, so we can see not only your own internal influence or imposter syndrome, but what external influence put a tool in your toolkit. And that toolkit can be good, bad, or indifferent. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, well, this is the way I was taught and this is the way it is. So there's a lot of heaviness and motivation around the unlearn, relearn model, but I allow it to unfold organically and I really take my time. Because if people are unauthentic, they've never been validated. A lot of them have intergenerational trauma. Yep. And I walk and tread very lightly with that. And it's not that we're unpacking or having them unlead fully. We're taking holistic approach using all different types of modalities, because it's not a one size fits all with coaching or even assessments for that matter. But I have to know where we start with the behavior. And once I understand the behavior, which is what they derive from my assessment, data doesn't lie. And it gives us that date and time stamp. And then we talk about goals, even the scary ones that they think may be achievable or not achievable. And we just slowly work our way to get there. So I'm helping putting tools in the toolkit. I'm the tour guide. And the amount of work that these courageous souls do, is phenomenal because unlearning's hard and it's messy and it's emotional and it's got lots of triggers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very conscientious to that because I've been there. I've been in that observer's chair. You know, I've had the hip waders on. I've had the mud up to my throat where you just think, I can't do this. Everything that's scary is worth doing because when you get to the other side, it's like procrastination, right? That fear-based behavior. Yeah. Do it anyways and fail because I'll put my hand out to help you stand back up and I'll fail forward with you. And that's how progress is made. That's how innovation happens.
Yeah.
And that's how I do my coaching. That's how I spend my time every day. And it's beyond rewarding.
Oh gosh, I love it. There's so much you said there that I want to respond to. So, but first I want to say this is, as you were describing your process, this is one of the reasons I was excited to have you on our show, because that is, I relate it so closely to what I and many professionals do in the DEI space, right? With diversity, equity, and inclusion, it requires us to unlearn past conditioning or messages or mm-hmm. whatever it was, and take on new understanding and a curiosity for others in the world. And that takes time, and it's not easy work. Yeah. So I love that you help people through that, because it is not something we can do alone easily. I mean, I think you can, but it you also benefit with a coach from that external perspective, right? Like yes. that a neutral perspective that's going to help you see things that you cannot see, because we all have blind spots and
absolutely.
Yeah. So powerful. And I love what you said, that it's, you have to work, you have to get past the fear, right? On the other, success is on the other side of fear oftentimes. And it's so, so rewarding when you take the leap.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. So let's talk more about heart-centered leadership, because again, this is where I tie this back to how leaders in any organization can embed more of the diversity, equity, and inclusion principles, which at the end of the day, for me, my perspective is that it's about caring for others, right? So what makes a heart-centered leader? What does that look like?
I just want to say, I'm so happy that you're saying the words and not saying DEI. That just makes me so happy. And because a lot of people don't do that. So I thank you. And I want to acknowledge that. So heart-centered leadership, my definition, is honoring your connection with people.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reciprocity. You're right in the moment. You're present. Your mind is nowhere else. You're just fully giving that person your presence. And when you honor your connection, it really opens the gateway for trust and rapport to be developed and established. And that to me is the best combination. My equation for diversity, equity, and inclusion plus heart-centered leadership, again, to me, it equals a universal language. Yes. They belong together. It's that simple.
I love it. Yeah. You really, there's not much more to say, right? It's about the human connection and caring for others. That is so beautiful. And for me, this is the entry point, right, into the harder stuff, which again, I love your process and what you get people through, because it starts with what did you say? Oh, taking the lid off of your own Pandora's box, right? And coming to terms with your beliefs and your bias and all of the things, right? That in the professional world, because this is also where a lot of my work happens, is in the workplace. There's no space for that, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So we sort of go through the motions and, you know, deal with unresolved conflict and a misalignment of values and those kinds of things, because we don't know how else to do it. But focusing on our individual growth, right? And again, through coaching, that goes a long way, is the first right step, or at least a step in that direction. That's wonderful. Okay, I have a question about, again, bringing this back to diversity, equity, and inclusion. In your work with leaders, do you ever encounter leaders that struggle with diversity, equity, and inclusion, or like implementing these kinds of initiatives? Yeah, can you share something about that?
Daily. You know, I'm going to deflate the elephant here because I think this is such a great opportunity and platform to do it. What I'm seeing now that really bothers me is organizations who are hiring someone of a different ethnicity. I'm going to say it just that simply. Mm-hmm. Because they don't have it represented in their culture. Yes. So they're methodology or leadership to have a diverse culture, I feel, is forced and aesthetic. Yeah. And it's missing the heart-centered leadership. It's missing the purpose. It's missing everything around inclusive leadership as a whole. And I'm a college professor at our local college in my city, and I teach inclusive leadership. And we talk about this because I'm a big proponent of imperfection. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes a lot of courage, because when you talk about imperfection, what are we really talking about? Personal risk-taking. So the leaders that are doing this well from an authenticity approach, 100%. They want to have that diverse culture that's healthy and vital and approachable and all the things heart-centered. But I am seeing some large corporations do it for the wrong reason, because they should, and it's out of obligation. And if you look at all the female leaders that are stepping into higher ranks, you can see the companies globally that are doing it heart-centered and the ones that are doing it from a forced perspective. And I have this discussion every day.
Wow. Wow. So interesting. And honestly, not surprising, unfortunately, to me, because I see this often in my work as well. But what you just described for me is diversity for diversity's sake, right? There, I like
say they did it so they can hang it up on their shingle. Exactly. So it matches the beautiful signage in their hallway of their mission statement and their values and all the things, right?
Absolutely.
And that bothers me, because I say behave your brand.
Yeah, I love that.
Like, I love imperfection. I'm waving my hand. So I'm going to lower it there. I get going, and then Zoom thinks I want to ask you a question. But, you know, I think the other thing too is curiosity. So within my heart-centered leadership model, I love different ideas, because I think it fosters and enables experience, which enables growth. So when we get a round table of all these different innovative, progressive minds together, that is my favorite thing to facilitate. And again, because it takes a lot of courage, like I said, to talk about imperfection. And when you have that commitment to staying the course, especially in diversity, equality, and inclusion, you gotta put your stake in. You gotta draw the line in the sand and say, this is the way it's going to be. It doesn't mean that you're not offering collaboration, because there's always going to be diverse thinking, and that within a team is greater than the sum of all of its parts.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's all connected, right? You can't just look at any one of these letters individually or in a silo. Like it's the whole picture. And absolutely. And I love that you put the heart-centered leadership right at the core. It's sort of the glue, right? That holds it all together. Now that's so powerful. And yeah, I've noticed that too. There are a number of organizations, and this has been happening now for a few years, where we've seen a lot of these, what I call like performative behaviors, right? That it's like, oh, look at us. Mm-hmm. Here are the things that the metrics and the things that we can measure, but they're not doing any of that internal work. Mm-hmm. And cause the I and the E, right? And the inclusion and equity piece, equality, That's the change work that needs to happen. That's the hard stuff that isn't always easy to measure, and it's more of a feeling, right? It's sort of the ethos of the organization. So yeah, so it's all connected and it's all important. And sadly, there are a number of organizations now that are even doing away with those roles and that programming, which leads me to my next question. I like a part of our mission here on this podcast is to demystify, right, the diversity, equity, and inclusion space. So we like to debunk myths whenever we can. So what's a common myth about diversity, equity, and inclusion that you would like to debunk?
I don't think it's one specific thing. I think I want to deflate the elephant again and encourage people that ignorance breeds fear. Don't be afraid to ask a question about any element of diversity, equality, and inclusion, because that's how we're going to help and support each other. That's a heart-centered strategy. So I don't think there's any myths. I think it's the fear and the apprehension of asking a dumb question, especially if you're in a role that has any element within diversity, equality, and inclusion. I'd rather put up the imperfect flag and say, yes, I have this role. Yes, I understand my responsibility. My identity's not attached to it, nor is my worth and worthiness. I'm not really sure if I'm doing this right. That's what I want. I want a more honest, real talent management world or sector, because I've coached people and I've had these exact conversations. And I don't know about you, but I am the least from perfect. And the more I share my imperfections, the more connection and the wider I open my bandwidth, because people relate to me. I have no problem being authentic, vulnerable, showing my humility. And I certainly don't know everything about diversity, equality, and inclusion. And I'm sure you don't. And I never want to say that I do, because I'm not going to be complacent. Like a leader, I'm going to learn. I'm going to have conversations. I'm going to put more tools in my toolkit and keep growing and evolving. And that's, again, the example that I want to set as a leader. And you know, diversity, equality, and inclusion is one small piece of it. But I will never not be afraid to say, I don't know.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That's powerful. Because you're right. It's fear, right? That holds us back from saying, I don't know. It's this, what I was saying, what we were talking about earlier, this conditioned mindset around what a leader looks like or how they behave, and they have the answers and they're always confident and knowledgeable, but it's not the reality, right? The reality is that we are all imperfect. We all have learning and growing to do. And the more open and honest we are about that, the better we off will be. And because not only to your point, people gravitate towards authenticity. And
they do. And you know, you and I are leaders outside of the work that we do. Mm-hmm. I lead as a mom. I lead as a daughter. I lead as a wife, as a friend, as an aunt, et cetera, et cetera. Leadership doesn't have to just be in the workplace. It's our being. It's us living our best life. And I know society has taught us that leaders have initials after their name. I know many leaders, and I've coached many leaders that don't have post-secondary, and some that never even went to high school and have multi-billion dollar businesses, because school doesn't trump experience. And it's not my place to judge. And the last sentence of my introductory chapter says, you do not need initials after your name to be kind. Ooh. Our social development ends at age 6. That's not a lot of time on the earth. 72 months? You can be kind. It doesn't mean you have to know everything. You have to leave space to be vulnerable, because if you're not learning every day, you're not growing. And if you're not growing, that's not leadership. Leaders grow every day, and they don't have to have a fancy title.
I love that. And leaders help others grow every day.
Absolutely.
Right? Do that through kindness and empathy and curiosity.
Yes.
Yeah. Deb, I can talk to you all day. So here, we're coming up to the end of our episode here. So I want to ask you for parting words of wisdom, which I feel like you just gave us, but if you want to share just like your a key piece of advice for our listeners around how to become a more heart-centered leader, and then I want to make sure that people know where to connect with you and where they can find you.
I think if you want to become a heart-centered leader or become more of a heart-centered leader, spend some time with yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm a yoga teacher. And yoga is science of the mind. And when we can quiet our mind and master our thoughts, and we know who we are, that is the on-ramp to limitless potential. My website is debcrow.com, and crow has an E on the end. All my socials are there. My book is there. We just released my audiobook last week. So my book is ebook, paperback, and audiobook. And I'm excited to send you a copy, and I'm delighted that you asked me to be on your show today.
Yes, it was such an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much, Deb. I'm looking forward to reading your book. And I'll make sure to have links to all of these, your website and LinkedIn, in our show notes. So listeners, make sure to check it out and stay in touch with Deb. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Inclusive Leader Spotlight. We hope that you're walking away with a better understanding of DEI and how you can bring it to life in your organization. If you are an inclusive senior level business leader who would like to be on this program, please visit DEIProfinder.com and click on the podcast tab to apply to be a guest. Also, if you know someone that would be a great guest, please send them to our website. If you enjoyed today's episode, would you consider sharing it on social media? You can find us by searching DEI Profinder on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and X. Include the hashtag Inclusive Leader Spotlight, and we'll make sure to show you some love. We are regularly putting on new episodes and content, so to make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast listening app. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Thank you again for listening and for your support of our mission to demystify diversity, equity, and inclusion. Together, we are exploring the power of DEI and its potential to transform the workplace and society at large. Until next time.